I talked to Senator John Arthur Smith, state senator, who basically, you know, formulates the budget at the state level, and he said he's never been so concerned about the effect that federal mm-hmm. monies will have on the state budget, that they get updates daily now. $3.3 billion in state funding cuts are looming out of $6 billion that come to New Mexico through the federal government. So he's looking not just at the labs, but Fort Bayard, Las Vegas Mental mm-hmm. Hospital, the university grants that could, you know, go down to zero. What do you say to someone like him who's worried about, you know, formulating a budget for the state when we have all this uncertainty?
Well, like John Arthur Smith, in this case, I'm also worried about the impacts to New Mexico. Again, you know, the failed experiment that was put into play a year ago by our colleagues, a manufactured crisis that put New Mexico in the middle of all that could go bad and all that could go wrong, which is why I voted against the bill then, and I continue to speak vocally against it today with what we could see. The cuts that they are putting on the table associated with what the impact to New Mexico could hurt us across the board, as you clearly stated, education cuts, healthcare, funding for our homeless, for our Meals on Wheels programs, for our seniors, for kids looking to get into school as we leverage federal dollars as well, in addition to our national labs, research and science, whatever may be taking place.
Can you say that again?
In addition to our national labs with research and development that should be taking place, should concern us all in New Mexico. Again, as we look at the right approach to balancing the budget, to spending down the deficit and having a positive impact with getting our fiscal house in order across the country, you know, our Republican colleagues are saying that they can achieve it through cuts alone. If that's the case, New Mexico will be at the center of all of those cuts. There must be a balanced approach, and that's where here in New Mexico, Democrats and Republicans alike, everyone that's concerned about what could happen to New Mexico needs to stand up to that notion of those that are not asking for a balanced approach and want to achieve this through cuts alone. If my Republican colleagues have their way and achieve their goals through cuts alone, New Mexico will be hurt and hurt in a way that I don't know how and when we'll be able to recover from.
Not too hopeful then. So you talked about the debt ceiling. You voted against it in 2011. Now you still...
So I voted for a clean vote last year that said that we would increase this without putting into question the uncertainty that we're seeing coming from the rating agencies today. With the vote that took place this last couple months, or I guess a month ago now, the rating agency still said that there will be a negative outlook on the country because the debt ceiling has only been kicked down the road for 3 months. Now, that's no way to be able to play games, especially as we're dealing with a delicate environment today with the economy, with the recession that we're still trying to get out of here. I would hope that our colleagues pay attention to this. I don't want to see the country suffer any longer. I want to see us get out of this recession. I want to see us get back to those prosperous times that we realized back in the 90s under President Clinton. That's what I'm advocating for, and that's what I hope we'll see.
Okay. And as a gun... you know, advocate, and you've supported gun issues or gun safety and other issues and on behalf of Northern New Mexico's, you know, large numbers of hunters. With what happened, you know, last month and what, you know, happened a couple of weeks ago in Albuquerque with unsecured guns, mm-hmm. are you in a hard place or have you changed your mind?
Well, I don't know that, you know, most folks have changed their minds on this issue. It's that I still support the Second Amendment, as I do believe everyone across the country supports the Second Amendment. But in the wake of the violence that we've seen, the work that the Vice President has put together, the advocacy of President Obama, the cry that we have had with mental and behavioral health, the concern of the lack of background checks that are taking place and the need to close those loopholes is somewhere that, where I am. I've put out some statements, even though, you know, other advocates had discouraged many people from supporting the president's actions and the vice president's recommendations. I put out a very strong statement of my support for the work that the vice president has done and what I hope to see across the country, and a serious conversation in the wake of the tragic loss, you know, whether it's right here in Albuquerque with the family whose lives were cut so short, the students in Connecticut who didn't even get a chance to live. There needs to be some common sense approaches to how we can deal with this issue. And the very reality of what even large magazines, the need for them, and when you talk about the magnitude there. And early on, I had supported saying, well, a magazine size, people can have as many rounds as they need. What's the concern? That's something that I've changed my position on. I'm not there any longer, and I really believe that we need to have some reforms along those lines, and really appreciate the legislators, even here in New Mexico, that are moving forward some of the suggestions that they have. Even in the wake of Sandy Hook, Governor Martinez even said that she wanted to close the loopholes that allow those that have mental illnesses with getting their hands on guns. I hope that she's willing to work with people here in New Mexico, as well as those of us across the country that are having this conversation. And I would even suggest that there's many NRA members that want to see some common sense approaches associated with what could happen with some of the reforms that are putting on the, that there are put on the table today.
What have you heard from those folks who are your constituents?
A lot of a lot more probably phone calls coming in associated with supporting the reforms that the vice president has placed on the table. We've also had calls from those that are staunch advocates for no gun control, that have said the Second Amendment is clear. You need to have your hands off our guns. Don't take our guns away. I don't think that's what is being put on the table today. No one is talking about repealing the Second Amendment. No one is talking about going into people's homes that have a firearm or a rifle for hunting and saying they're going to take that away. That's not what's on the table today. So I'm hoping that some common sense will find its way into the conversation, and we can have some honest conversations about this to be able to do what we can to try to reduce the chances of that violence taking place that we saw in Aurora, that we saw in Sandy Hook, and most recently here in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
And in fact, the Second Amendment calls for a regulated militia. So we have an assault weapon ban bill being presented by Dianne Feinstein in the Senate. Would you support something like that in the House?
Well, I'll take a close look at any legislation that makes its way to the House floor. But as you said, you know, the Second Amendment is very clear associated with the kind of regulation that's around it. And that's why today fully automatic weapons are already illegal to be held in the United States. And so as you talk about reforms that are being put on the table that meet the test of the Second Amendment, I think that's all that anyone's talking about, whether it's Senator Feinstein or Diana DeGette or others in the House of Representatives that are talking about different pieces of legislation, or even here in New Mexico as we talk about background checks and the need to be able to provide more support for mental and behavioral health. You know, that's a concern that we should all have. And even with how that deals with schools, you know, sadly today, you know, some of the first jobs that are cut in our public schools are social workers or counselors. And that's the first line of defense that we have to be able to help these young kids with mental or behavioral health illnesses or concerns. And that's the conversation we should have, is how can we can work together. Senator Domenici was a champion when it came to mental and behavioral health as a prominent Republican. There's no reason that there's a political divide here. And I'm hopeful that we can have the conversation. But going back to the budget conversation, if my Republican colleagues insist on cuts alone, those are the first programs that get cut. We can't have that.
You know then about Representative Miguel Garcia's bill for background checks here in New Mexico. And I got a text from a Republican senator, a representative, I think, who said there's sure to be a fight in the Judiciary Committee today, and presumably about that issue. Are you astounded that it's still like this tug of war? That, I mean, I know you're saying there's some common sense approach that we need to take, but there is also that far right, that the conservative view that any crack in the door will lead to full out.
Well, it seems that background checks, if there is such a thing as low-hanging fruit with this debate, that is one of the basic areas where we should find some agreement on. And as I suggested earlier, if I remember correctly, Governor Martinez, after Sandy Hook, her comments were that those that have mental illnesses should not get their hands on guns. Well, that sounds to me like we need background checks. And again, I certainly hope that this isn't an area where there's going to be a partisan fight, that we can, again, find a common sense approach to having these conversations. Vice President Biden has been very clear associated with his outline and his recommendation for background checks. I support that. And I think across the country, the more that we can move in that direction, the better off we're going to be as we begin to address this issue.
Do you see any impingement on the Second Amendment with the president's executive orders, those 23 items?
You know, I'm sure that some may try to challenge the president's executive orders in that realm. But again, the president, I would suggest, was very careful in making sure that as they initiated their executive orders, that they would be able to withstand the test of what the Second Amendment is supposed to protect. And again, I believe in the Bill of Rights. But we have to make sure that as we're looking at the way the Second Amendment was written, that we're able to address this. There's a reason why people don't have rocket launchers or hand grenades. And that's all in the realm of what the Second Amendment entails.
With the First Amendment, you can have freedom of speech, but you can't shout in a crowded theater.
That's right.
There are limitations to those constitutional amendments. Okay, is there anything you would like to add that, you know, maybe I've missed or something that just developed that, you know, you'd like to let
No, I think we touched
listeners?
On it. You know, the immigration reform piece mm-hmm. that I was really happy to see that 8 senators came out with their announcement today that they worked on over the weekend. On Friday of this last week, we met with the president, the Congressional Hispanic Caucus, myself, Michelle Lujan Grisham was in the meeting, Congressman Ruben Hinojosa, Congressman Javier Becerra, Senator Menendez, Luis Gutierrez, and Linda Sanchez. We had a chance to have the conversation with the president, and tomorrow he'll be outlining in Nevada what he's going to be working on. We saw the principals come out of the Senate. They're going to be working closely now, and it's good to see that members like Jeff Flake, Marco Rubio, John McCain, Lindsey Graham, who are sometimes seen as very conservative senators, are working with Democrats to make this happen. That's the way the Congress should work, and that's what the American people want. So I'm really happy to see that progress, and I'm looking forward to getting something done before summer on that issue.
So you know here at the state level, we're talking still about repeal of the immigrant license law, one of two states, I believe, that still has it. And Representative Varela has said, why don't we wait and see what the immigration picture looks like a year from now or whatever, let these licenses expire, and then by the time they come back to renew, we'll have different, you know, rules, so to speak, at the federal level to deal with. Do you agree with that approach?
Well, at the federal level, I've been concentrating on a comprehensive immigration reform fix. I think that addresses the concerns across the country. And that's why I hope that Democrats and Republicans alike come together, whether it's at the local level, the state level, or the federal level, to demand that comprehensive immigration reform be addressed. Governor Martinez is seen as a leader across the country when it comes to the Republican Party. I would hope that she would challenge more Republican governors to get on board and support even what Senator Rubio now and Senator McCain and Jeff Flake, Lindsey Graham have advocated in the principles associated with an immigration reform package. So hopefully we can work together as a family to address an important need that the country has and be able to help 11 to 18 million people come out of the shadows and do what's right for the country, but also respect people and treat them with dignity and respect.
One more question on Medicaid that I thought of while you were speaking there. Do you think it was a wise move on the governor's part to agreeing to have federal Medicaid law supersede here in New Mexico?
Well, you know, when you talk about caring for people and the importance of health care, it shouldn't be a partisan issue. And New Mexico was at a place where they would have turned away a lot of federal support to be able to provide more health care coverage to their citizens. I think it's important that we came together, that Democrats in the legislature worked with Republicans, and that as a state we were able to support more help, more health care coverage for New Mexicans. That was a good thing.
Is that the number one issue that you see over the next 5-10 years facing us as we have older, you know, folks baby boomers getting ready to retire. So many ailments that people have. You see the plethora of ads for drugs on television. Is that going to be our number one issue, taking care of a sick society in the future?
Well, I would suggest that the economy and everything that's related to that is what we need to be looking at. It should be our focal point, not only short-term, but mid-term and long-term. Healthcare is a big part of that. Providing coverage, and you look at the cost and how that impacts not only local budgets, but federal budgets, how it impacts businesses. If we can make sure that we're keeping people healthier as opposed to letting them get ill and their illnesses become chronic conditions so that the costs run up, so that the beds in the hospitals are being used, so more people are forced to go to the emergency room because they can't afford health care, that has a negative impact on the economy as a whole. And so, one, we need to keep our citizens healthy, make sure that we work with them to get them the best coverage possible. But as we strengthen the economy and all the pieces associated with it, everyone will be in a better place. And, you know, I just go back to things that I learned from my father. You treat people with respect and dignity. And when we talk about our seniors or our young kids that sometimes need help the most, we need to remember that when we're casting a vote or when sometimes the rhetoric gets away from elected officials, there's people at the end of that. And we need to remember that we need to treat those people with the respect that they're owed. And that's how we should lead our lives. Whether it's on the freeway and someone puts their signal on to try to get into your lane, let them in. You know, I've learned from my mom, especially growing up, when you walk into a grocery store and there's someone that needs help opening the door, open the door for them. Smile a little bit more. Sometimes it may seem silly, but it goes a long way. And with the same respect and dignity that we can show others in our personal and daily lives, we can definitely do that through policy and through the engagement that we have every day.
Any other words of wisdom your father passed on, or what did he say when you first got elected or when he saw you first get sworn in? I talked to him just before he went to that first swearing in. He was so excited about it.
Well, you know, Dad was very humble and led with a lot of humility. I heard Congresswoman Linda Sanchez say this recently. There's in politics, there's show horses and there's workhorses. My father was a workhorse, and I learned a lot from him. The importance of hard work, the importance of getting things done, and trying to bring people together. I think Dad was always seen as a convener of people, and he tried to find that common ground by listening. We need to listen a lot more to our constituents. We can learn from them quite a bit. There's a lot of wise people that we're fortunate to represent. And the more that we can include them in our daily decisions and understand how our daily decisions impact them in their lives, in their homes, in their kids' lives, in pursuing an education, or sometimes just keeping a roof over their head and food in their bellies, we need to pay attention to that. You know, Dad just, he loved people. He loved New Mexico. He loved this state. And he always pushed us to appreciate that. And so the more that I can listen to Dad's advice, which is still around me every day, and like a good friend of mine who lost her father about a decade ago told me, just listen, your dad will speak to you, whether it's in song or in your dreams or just walking around. You'll hear him, but you have to listen. I'll try to do that more and more and just see what we can do to keep the good work that my dad advocated for and that he'll be remembered for.
Do you have any other aspirations politically? You know, Hispanic is the cool word now nationally.
Well, it's great to see how the Hispanic population, the Latinos across the country, are being sought after as a growing population. In New Mexico, we've always known that. Hispanic community's always been strong. But we have a responsibility to work with each other, with other communities, to embrace diversity. You know, as far as me, you know, I have my hands full. I have a big responsibility as a representative of the people in New Mexico, and I'm going to continue to do that to the best of my ability. And, you know, we'll see what life holds. But right now, that's what I'm concentrating on, and I just hope that I can live up to the expectations that the community has and that I can continue to earn their trust.
Well, at 62%, you know, winning by that much.
Well, you know, what a show of support and a humbling experience when that much of the electorate or the community comes and shows their support. It's incredible, and it really is humbling. But it also puts a lot of responsibility on those shoulders for you to carry. And you have to do it to the best of your ability. You know, every day you get up, think about home, think about New Mexico, and try to do your best.